want to continue to talk about the book of Daniel, but we want to set the stage again. The context, I think, is very important to learning the things that are contained in the various chapters. We've mentioned in the introductory material that the book naturally divides itself into two parts. The first part in Daniel chapter 1, verses 1 through chapter 6, verse 28, basically through chapter 1 through chapter 6, declares the providence of God in history. Perhaps it's important for us to underscore the word providence. What does the word providence mean? Yes, Daryl? Okay, something like that. Randy?
The word provide is in there.
That's what it means, to provide. And God has provided some things in history. Also in our... Yes?
Part of the word is the same word we get our word video for. So it's to see. So God sees ahead. He looks ahead.
That's right.
And makes provision.
That's right. The word is used actually one time, I think, in the New Testament, where we see Paul's defense to King Agrippa, and he's complimenting King Agrippa regarding the providence that he's had over the people. And so, yes, to provide for, and to look ahead and to provide for. And so this portion of our study has to do with God providing, looking ahead and providing certain things in history. And it includes Daniel and his determination to be pure in the first chapter, and Nebuchadnezzar's dream, and Daniel's interpretation of that dream in chapter 2, and Daniel's promotion in the kingdom of Nebuchadnezzar. And then in the third chapter, we studied about the faith of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, to use their Babylonian names. And then in the fourth chapter, Nebuchadnezzar's second dream about the tree and his temporary insanity that caused him to realize that God rules in the kingdoms of men. And then in the fifth chapter, we studied about Belshazzar and how that he saw the hand writing on the wall, and of course his knees smote one against the other, and we saw that he was found lacking. And in the 30th and 31st verse, we see the fulfillment of the prophecy that Daniel had made, how that the kingdom was taken from the Babylonians and given to the Medes and the Persians without a battle even being fought. And then in the sixth chapter, we see a change take place regarding rulership that we need to notice, from Nebuchadnezzar and Belshazzar to Darius, who was the leader of the Medes. Cyrus was the ruler of the Persian Empire, and it seems that the man named Darius had been appointed to rule over what had been the Chaldean Empire. But of course he was persuaded by some of his governors to ask that anyone who would make a request of anybody other than the king, that they be cast into the den of lions. And that's what we see occurring in the sixth chapter, with Daniel making prayers unto God and being cast into the den of lions and coming out unharmed. Now, in the 7th through the 12th chapters, we read of God's purpose in history. We see in the 7th chapter, what we're going to try to study somewhat tonight, Daniel's dream of the four beasts. Now, what we are seeing is the tide turning from dreams that others have had to those that Daniel has. Dreams and visions, and so we want to study about some of those things as we approach the second half of the book. Now, what is the theme of this great book that we've mentioned a number of times? I didn't have the slightest idea what you said.
God is sovereign.
God is sovereign, that's right. God rules in the kingdoms of men. I don't know if it was the fan on the computer or what, but I had no earthly idea what you said. God rules in the kingdoms of men. And that becoming the theme of the book, we want to study about Daniel's dream of the four beasts, his dream in the 8th chapter of the ram and the goat, And Daniel's prayer, the vision of the 70 weeks, and then Daniel's vision of the time of the end. Now, there's an object to all of this. Terry, I know, has pointed out in a number of classes. I've heard him online, and I was also here. But he's pointed out in a number of classes that the extent of the book of Daniel is bookmarked by what? What becomes the end of the bookmark on the far end? The destruction of Jerusalem, yes. And so we're looking from the time of Daniel, the Babylonian Empire, on one end, to the destruction of Jerusalem on the other end. And that bookmarks the things historically that Daniel is talking about. Now, as we study the book of Daniel, admittedly, it is somewhat of a difficult book. But what we want to see is how our understanding of this Old Testament book affects our understanding of some things in the New Testament. If you'll turn to Mark, the first chapter, and look with me in verse 14. Mark, the first chapter, in verse 14, it says, "Now after John was delivered up, Jesus came into Galilee, preaching the gospel of God, and saying, 'The time is fulfilled, and the kingdom of God is at hand. Repent ye, and believe in the gospel.'" The time is at hand. Jesus is talking about something. He's identifying something when he says the time is at hand. And as we look at that, we want to see that, yes, Daniel prophesied concerning the ending of world empires, but he also talked about the beginning of something. He was talking about the beginning of the kingdom of Christ when he said in Daniel chapter 2, verse 44, "In the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom, which shall never be destroyed, nor shall the sovereignty thereof be left to another people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these and stand forever." Now the prophecy of Daniel has application to our understanding of the time is fulfilled when Jesus spoke that in Mark chapter 1. Now there's another passage that we want to look at found in Matthew the 24th chapter. Matthew the 24th chapter, reading beginning at verse 15. Matthew 24, verse 15. Jesus is very specific in his statements in this, where he is speaking concerning the destruction of the city of Jerusalem. And he says, "When therefore ye see the abomination of desolation, which was spoken of through Daniel the prophet, standing in the holy place, let him that readeth understand. Then let them that are in Judea flee into the mountains," and so forth. Jesus is calling upon those who would read this to understand some things, that this is what Daniel is talking about. Daniel was talking about the time when you would look about and see the Roman armies encompass the city, then it would be time to flee. But when the Roman armies would encompass the city, what was their intent? What were they to do with the city of Jerusalem when the Roman armies encompassed the city? What did they intend to do with it? Destroy it. That's right. And so when he identifies the abomination of desolation, he's talking about the Roman armies. Notice, if you will, please, in Luke, the 21st chapter, reading beginning at verse 20. "But when ye see Jerusalem compassed with armies, then know that her desolation is at hand. Then let them that are in Judea flee into the mountains, and let them that are in the midst of her depart out. And let not them that are in the country enter therein. For these are the days of vengeance, that all things which are written may be fulfilled." Now, where were they written when we look at the parallel accounts? Where did Jesus say they were written according to Matthew's account? Terry?
Well, Jesus didn't actually, in these parallel accounts, he had just quoted from Daniel.
He just quoted from Daniel. And so when he's referring to the days of vengeance in which all things would be fulfilled, what things were those if they were not the prophecies of Daniel relative to the condemnation and the destruction of Rome and, in essence, all world empires as it would stand during the days of Rome? Now, any questions regarding that? Yes.
Just real quick, when you're looking at those two accounts that you have referenced, it says, "When
70, and the other part was going to happen in the last day.
Unlike the premillennialist. Exactly. Exactly. I like to parallel Luke 21 with Matthew 24 and see the contrast of those days versus that day. That day certainly stands in stark contrast in Matthew's account to those days, and of course the premillennialist wants to tie all that together. And that doesn't fit the context either of Luke 21 or Matthew 24. When we consider the listing of the things that would be in those days, there would be signs. But of that day, Jesus said, knoweth no man. And so there weren't going to be any flags regarding the coming of that day, as the premillennialist has affirmed. Yes, Randy?
I just want to comment when Jesus was talking about seeing Jerusalem surrounded by armies. When you see it, he's talking to people who will see it.
He's talking about those who lived within the city who were among the saints. Correct.
I just want to point out, I guess just an observation, this isn't the first time Jerusalem's been surrounded by armies.
That is true. But it's the first time that it was surrounded by armies of which Daniel had prophesied. And we know that so because the Lord references that specific prophecy. Okay? All right. Terry?
Those are thoughts that we have to keep in mind. They're going to become pertinent to the material in some chapter of Daniel.
Yes, they are. And of course, these things, as I have on the board, the next point, we have to have respect for the context. And the things that Daniel is presenting have a theme to them. And we've got to keep the things that Daniel is speaking of within that context. And then thirdly, we must interpret the book consistent with all else in the Bible on this subject. In other words, we can't take something from Daniel and lift it out of its context to teach something that's contrary. For example, the premillennial doctrine. We can't lift something out of Daniel to teach something that's not consistent with the rest of the Bible. And the theme of this has to do with God ruling in the kingdoms of men, and shows God's purpose and plan in history regarding the nation of Israel, and then in contrast to the everlasting kingdom, which was at the time of Daniel yet to come. And I think again in these benchmarks that we have established from the reign of King Nebuchadnezzar to the time of the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70, within that perimeter we have the establishment of a kingdom which cannot be shaken. One that cannot be moved, as contrasted with world kingdoms that can be shaken and were shaken, as are discussed in Daniel 2 and following. Now, we want to see from Daniel 2 to Daniel 7. How do you like my chart? Took me a little while to make that, but be that as it may, I thought it was a good chart. Daniel 2 and Daniel 7. We see that there is a comparison that follows, and I think we'll see that comparison in some other places in Daniel as well. But in Daniel chapter 2, Daniel has had this dream of this image. Looks better on my computer. It just does. But he has this dream of this image, and he doesn't know or doesn't reveal what the image was, or, of course, he didn't know the interpretation of it. And Daniel comes before him and presents what the image was, what his dream was, and explains to him the interpretation of it. And the interpretation was that the head of this image is gold, and that that represented King Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. And then this portion of the image represented by silver, which represented the Medo-Persian Empire. And then this portion of the image is represented by brass, which contrast, or I should say parallels, the Greek and or Alexandrian Empire. And it's during the days of this fourth kingdom that has in it the weakness of iron and clay in the feet. During the days of this fourth empire, we see Daniel prophesying in verses 44 and 45 that in the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom. Now, what's going to happen to these kings and their kingdoms?
They'll all be destroyed,
including this one. But he's identifying that during the days of these kings, the God of heaven is going to set up one that cannot be destroyed. Now open your Bible to Daniel chapter 7, and I want to look at just three verses while we're introducing this material. Three verses. In chapter 7, look at verse 18. It says, "But the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever and ever, forever and ever." Now that indicates a kingdom that cannot be shaken. The saints would receive this. They become a part of it. And then in verse 22, he says, "Until the Ancient of Days come, and judgment was given to the saints of the Most High, and the time that the saints possessed the kingdom." In verse 27, he continues. Verse 27, "And the kingdom, and the dominion, and the greatness of the kingdoms under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey him." Now, as we look at these passages in Daniel chapter 7, it parallels Daniel chapter 2, as we see the establishment of a kingdom which cannot be shaken, as it were, in Daniel chapter 2. And we might note that this kingdom of Daniel parallels what the book of Revelation says, and we're going to be looking at this somewhat in our studies of the seventh chapter, parallels the imagery of Revelation chapter 13, as we'll see that on both sides of this chart. But coming down this line is what we want to talk about in our study tonight. The vision that Daniel had to do with a lion, a bear, a leopard, and iron teeth, 10 horns, and he's prophesying of a kingdom that makes war with the saints. Now, we're going to see that to be the context of Daniel chapter 7 almost in its entirety. Now, as we reflect upon that, let's look at the basic things that are presented in this chapter. Basically, two things. One is the vision that Daniel had and a description of it. And then secondly, in the chapter, we're going to be studying about the interpretation, what that means, as it is revealed in the context of the chapter. Perhaps it's also important to our study, by way of introducing some of these things, to notice in the first verse the date of the vision. It says, "In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions of his head upon his bed. Then he wrote the dream and told the sum of the matter." Now, whether my dates are right or not, I know that they vary somewhat, because it's not real definite exactly when these men began to reign, or at least in the studies that I've engaged in. But I've suggested about 560 to about 550 is about the time that Daniel sees this vision, when Belshazzar became the co-regent with his father, Nabonidus, the son-in-law to Nebuchadnezzar, which indicates that Belshazzar and Nebuchadnezzar were certainly related, to say the least. And I think you've had this discussion back over in the fifth chapter. But in the seventh chapter, it dates the events, the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon. This is when Daniel had this dream, or this vision. Now, this vision consists of three parts. First of all, it consists of the four beasts from the sea, and then the awesome judgment of verses 9 through verse 12. And then we'll see the coronation of the Son of Man in Daniel chapter 7, verses 13 and 14. The four beasts from the sea. Some have suggested, and I'm not sure that I would be dogmatic, that the sea may symbolize the masses of humanity. That has some merit, that this becomes the background from which these beasts arise. We'll talk more about that, I think, as we get further into our study. The winds that are spoken of in verses 2 through verse 8. may be the forces that God used to control and destroy. And I want us to read these first eight verses. I think sometimes we talk about the text and fail to read the text. But begin, if you will, at verse 2, and let's read through verse 8. It says, Daniel spake and said, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven break forth upon the great sea. And four great beasts came up from the sea, diverse one from another. Now, that's one of the reasons why I'm thinking that the great sea has to do with the masses of humanity. But the first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. Now, I want to go back just a little. Well, maybe I'll go forward to this next chart. Yes, here's where I want to be. The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. I beheld till the wings thereof were plucked, and it was lifted up from the earth and made to stand upon 2 feet as a man, and a man's heart was given to it. And behold, another beast, a second, like to a bear, and it was raised up on one side, and 3 ribs were in its mouth between its teeth. And they said thus unto it, Arise, devour much flesh. After this, I beheld, and lo, another, like a leopard, which had upon its back 4 wings of a bird. The beast had also 4 heads, and dominion was given to it. After this, I saw in the night visions, and behold, a 4th beast, terrible and powerful and strong exceedingly, and it had great iron teeth. It devoured and brake in pieces and stamped the residue with its feet, and it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another horn, a little one, before which 3 of the 1st horns were plucked up by the roots, and behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a great mouth speaking great things. Now, if you saw a vision like that, it'd scare you to death. But basically, there are 4 things that Daniel sees. This first beast was that of a lion with eagle's wings, the wings being plucked off and made to stand, and then given the heart of a man. Now, let's go back to our image, or to our chart. You see the first of the images or visions that Daniel sees, that of a lion, as it were, that had eagle's wings. Now, what would that correspond to? In the things that Daniel saw, there is a repetition of imagery that we see in the book of Daniel. The appearance of a lion that has the description that we read in verse 4, what would it correspond to in the image that, or the dream that King Nebuchadnezzar had? The head of gold. So what are we describing in Daniel chapter 7 when you see the expression, and behold another, or after this, and then after this? What are we seeing? We're seeing kingdoms, but we're seeing a sequence involved in these kingdoms, a succession in these kingdoms. That's right. And it becomes almost identical to the dream that King Nebuchadnezzar had in Daniel chapter 2. So it complements the things that we've read. Terry?
Okay.
So there's certainly that imagery along
Right.
By Jeremiah, and we, in a similar fashion, we see in the 17th chapter of Ezekiel, several verses, I think maybe about the first 14 or 15 verses of that chapter, that we see the imagery of an eagle,
yes,
being used to represent Babylon.
Yes. And we see that also used representing the Romans, I think, in the destruction of the city of Jerusalem in Matthew 24. The imagery has to do, I think, with conquering and victory and things of that nature.
Plus, I don't think it's a coincidence that we see in secular history. To mention the architecture of the Ishtar Gate, Babylon, and the processional that led out from that gate for quite a ways, and that processional and the gate were bordered with tiles, and the artwork was actually lines on both sides of that processional, proceeding from the Ishtar Gate in Babylon. The use of a lion was apparently prevalent.
To identify Babylon.
To identify Babylon.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Any other comment or question? That's not just coincidence, I don't think.
No.
Yes, David? Yes. 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 Well, again, you're right. There is similar imagery. And we're going to talk about, I think, some of those things way down the pike when we finish some of our studies of Daniel and perhaps Ezekiel, and then get into some of those things. Yes, some of the, well, they're not here. Dick and Peggy, we've been talking about Babylon the Great, the Great Babylon, and the fall of it, and so forth. But yes, it indicates a great empire or kingdom falling, and we'll talk some more about that a little bit later on. All right, see if I can catch up here. The second beast, if you'll drop down to the text of verse 5, the second beast says that it was a bear with ribs in its mouth, raised up on one side, and told to arise, devour much flesh. And I think in the parallel of the things that Nebuchadnezzar saw, this would represent the Medo-Persian Empire, that it raises on one side, may reflect the Persian dominance. I think we just mentioned that Cyrus was the king of the Medo-Persian Empire, and Darius was made the head of the Chaldean portion, which would indicate Persian dominance in the Medo-Persian Empire. The three ribs in its mouth very well may illustrate the victories of the Medo-Persian Empire over Egypt, Syria, and Babylon as they established their dominance as a world empire. Yes, which I think is impressive. Yes, Randy?
This is Belshazzar in chapter 7. Is that the same one that's in chapter 5?
I think so.
So it just is stepping us back in time.
Yeah.
Chapter 5, he dies.
Well,
chapter 5, verse 30.
Yeah, the Chaldean king was slain. I think it is the same. Terry, help me out on that. Is it the same? One, I think it is.
Yeah, what we have to remember here is, as you pointed out at the beginning of class, that we now, in terms of studying Daniel, we left the historical section of the book.
Yeah.
And now we're into a different kind of section that isn't going to be in the same order as chapters 1 through 6.
I was about to use the word, it's not intended to be a chronology. It's visions that he saw. The rest of this book is not an in-order thing. It's just pictures and then lessons to glean from the pictures. Okay? The next kingdom that we want to think about, the third, the four-winged, the four-headed leopard, dominion is given. Now, in the sequence of kingdoms that we not only see here, but paralleling that to Acts 2. This would represent the Greek Empire of Alexander the Great. The wings may symbolize its rapid conquest, the four heads prophetic of its division by four generals after Alexander's death, indicating the temporary nature of that kingdom, that it too would be conquered. And then the fourth beast is described as the terrible and powerful beast, exceedingly strong, huge teeth, as it were, devouring, breaking in pieces, trampling the residue with its feet. Now, what would that be in the sequence of kings, and what does that dictate about our understanding of the nature of this fourth beast?
Parallels
the Roman Empire. And what does that suggest to us about the strength and prominence of the Roman Empire in comparison to that of Nebuchadnezzar, that of the Medes and the Persians, and that of Alexander the Great? Was this greater or smaller? Well, it'd have to be greater. It'd have to be greater. Devouring and breaking in pieces and trampling residue under its feet. Now, in the text, we see this fourth beast described differently from the other three, and we'll talk about that. Terry? You had a question or a comment? When you do that, I mean, he's thinking about something.
Yeah, I was thinking. I'll hold off my comment.
Okay. Well, unlike the other beast, this particular one is not compared to any animal. And I think in the 13th chapter of the book of Revelation, we see that this beast may be a mixture. Let's turn over to that. Revelation 13, 1 and 2. Revelation 13, 1 and 2. It says, "And he stood upon the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast coming up out of the sea, having 10 horns and 7 heads, and on his horns 10 diadems, and upon his heads names of blasphemy. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power and his throne and great authority." Now that suggests to us, I think, a parallel between the things we're seeing in Revelation 13 and the extent of power given to the fourth beast that we see in Daniel chapter 7. Any comment or thought on that? There's a parallel, I'm convinced, between the 7th chapter of Daniel and the 13th chapter of the book of Revelation. The symbols are very similar. This that we're reading about in our text of the fourth beast, Daniel 7, has 10 horns and another little horn coming up among them, before whom 3 of the first horns were plucked from their roots, in which were the eyes of a man and a mouth speaking great things as if to boast. Who would that be if not the Roman Empire in the sequence of kingdoms that we see in Daniel chapter 2, during which the kingdom of God would be established?
mm-hmm. spoken relating to the horn of the mm-hmm. fourth beast. And we switch back again in the narrative to, and behold, one like the Son of Man coming with the clouds of heaven. It would seem that this ascension of one like the Son of Man is occurring during the time of this fourth beast.
Yes. Yes. And that would have to be so.
It becomes very, very important to keep the chronology of history in mind studying this chapter, because mm-hmm. that right there makes the connection between the second chapter of Daniel and Daniel chapter 7, that the one like the Son of Man ascending to the Ancient of Days, that what we can read when that occurs.
Absolutely. Yes.
That ties it right back to the second chapter of Daniel.
Yeah, Acts 2 and Acts 2 in particular, and Ephesians chapter 1. Now, we've said a whole lot in that statement, and I might ask you to say that again, because quite frankly, I'm thinking that what you just said, we need to say it again for the sake of clarification and understanding. Yes. I think, moreover, their pride, certainly, but their power, the power that they would exalt over other kingdoms, the domination over other kingdoms.
Why then do you think the mixture of the animals?
Well, because the Roman Empire, when it conquered the Medes and the kingdom of Alexander the Great, we don't have a cessation of people. The people are still existent. They've just been dominated by another power. And so what you have is a blending of people. So you have a nation, the Romans, becoming a powerful a nation from the standpoint of rulership, but the dominion over other peoples was strong, pompous. Does that help a little bit?
Yeah, yes. Are you suggesting that the mixture of the animals really more than anything represents the fact that this fourth kingdom would be like a melting pot of
somewhat so.
Rome is somewhat legendary for their immorality. And their,
well, you have the New Testament text.
Self-destructive, yeah. For their own immorality.
You have the New Testament text in Matthew 24 referring to Rome, and we know that's so because of Luke 21, affirming that when you see the abomination of desolation, that's descriptive. I don't think we find that terminology particularly in these verses of Daniel, but we do find it in Matthew 24, where Jesus refers to the Roman Empire as an abomination of desolation. So, yes, to answer your question, it's not answered necessarily from this text, but Matthew 24 answers it. Yes. Okay, yes.
Just real quick, we're doing a very good job of going over all these symbols and everything that Daniel has seen and described in the vision, but another lesson we can learn from this is that all these different kingdoms are trying to establish this kingdom that's going to last forever. And yet the only one that can establish the kingdom that lasts forever is the Ancient of Days.
That's right. That's right. That's right. And that's where we get into the verses of toward the end of the chapter, verse 27 and following. That's what he's affirming. Yes, exactly. Very good. All right. Here again, I wanted you to see this chart. We saw it in the beginning of the image, and now we want to see it at the end. I'm sorry, the vision. And we want to see it at the end of the vision, because I think it clarifies the parallel. And this is important to understand. We're going to put another chart over here to another column before we're through with Daniel and see again that this parallel, Randy, is not something that is bookend together, but it just overlays and overlays and overlays. And the visions that Daniel sees complements the things that we're reading in Daniel chapter 2. Does that make sense? Okay. All right. Well, let's move on just a little bit. The three parts of this vision. The second one, the awesome judgment. Drop down to verse 9. Daniel chapter 7, verse 9. We want to read verses 9 through 12. Daniel says, I beheld till thrones were placed, and one that was Ancient of Days did sit. His raiment was white as snow, and the hair of his head like pure wool. His throne was fiery flames, and the wheels thereof burning fire. A fiery stream issued and came forth from before him. Thousands of thousands ministered unto him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. And judgment was set, and the books were opened. And I beheld at that time, because of the voice of the great words which the horn spake, I beheld even till the beast was slain, and its body destroyed, and it was given to be burned with fire. And as for the rest of the beasts, their dominion was taken away, yet their lives were prolonged for a season and a time. Now keep in mind that Daniel is not giving us an interpretation yet. He's just telling us what he saw. And he saw these four beasts that came up out of the sea till he saw the throne that was placed, or thrones that were placed, and one of the Ancient of Days did sit. Who is the Ancient of Days? Who's in control? Who rules in the kingdoms of men? God does. Doesn't matter what kingdom it is, God has authority over it. His kingdom will endure forever. And we see that all of these will bow down before him and minister unto him. He says, I beheld at that time, because of the voice of the great words, I beheld even till the beast was slain. What's going to happen to Rome? Pardon me? It will fall. That's right. The awesome judgment of God. Thrones put in place. The Ancient of Days seated. And here he's described. The court or judgment was seated and the books were opened. That paints a picture for us. Yes, Joey?
What was the time span of the Roman Empire in terms of it being a world-dominating empire?
Help me out, Terry. The time frame as far as a world empire was...
Around 31 or so.
30 BC. That's what I was thinking.
Until it started being sacked by various tribes outside the empire in the 300s and 400s.
That's what I thought, but I wasn't certain on the closing date of that. But that gives you a bookmark.
300 to 400 years.
Yeah.
As a
power. Yeah. The Rise and Fall of the Roman Empire, I think, the book, I've forgotten who wrote it, but bookends that.
Gibbons,
thank you. Bookends that for us and helps us to understand that.
Yeah, I think the actual genesis of Rome up to 30 B.C., I think that goes all the way back to close to around 500 B.C., but Rome was simply growing.
Yeah. I think sometimes we have a misconception about some of these world empires, and we think that just boom, they existed. And that's not altogether true. There was a growing of power that allowed them to reach a state of domination. So that's, I think, important for us to consider. All right, this judgment. And we've already mentioned this great and terrible beast was slain. Its body destroyed and given to the burning of the flame. Now the rest of the beast, they had their dominion taken away. What does that suggest to us about whatever power they may have had? It was temporary. Thank you. It was temporary. This fourth beast, when we parallel that to Daniel 2, who made the previous kingdom's power temporary? We've got a sequence, starting with the king of Babylon. His kingdom did not exist forever. Why? Who took it from him? The Medes and the Persians. Theirs did not last forever. Who took it from them? The Greek or Alexandrian. And theirs did not last forever. Who took it from them? The great, powerful Roman Empire. But Rome's would not last forever either. Who took it from them? God did. The end. Okay? God did. And that's why it tells us that they had their dominion taken away. Their lives were prolonged for a season and a time. Now, frankly, I'm not exactly sure of the application of their lives were prolonged for a season and a time, except to suggest that it was a temporary period of time that they were allowed to have their dominion.
So all along, it was really God that took these countries by his
ignorance. God rules in the kingdoms of men. Exactly the point. Yes. Exactly the point. You remember the great question that Habakkuk raised about the people of Judah, why they were tolerated being so evil in the practices of their idolatry. And God told Habakkuk, don't worry about that. And I'm loosely paraphrasing because Richard's going to push the button. He told Habakkuk, don't worry about that because I'm going to take care of that. I'm going to raise up the Chaldeans and they'll destroy the people of Judah. And Habakkuk's question was why and how come them, because they're much worse than the people of Judah. God says, don't worry about that. I've got a plan. I'll take care of them. God rules in the kingdoms of men. Thank you for your participation in our study tonight. We didn't get as far as perhaps we could have or should have, but hopefully it was beneficial.